from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, broadcasting tonight from the Republican National Convention at Madison Square Garden in New York. And it's quite a scene here. Ring upon ring of security in the streets of Manhattan outside the garden. Hundreds of thousands of protesters in the streets yesterday and more today. And inside the convention hall, the sense that after a hard season, George Bush may now be finding his way forward in his tight race with John Kerry. This week in New York is a big part of that effort. We will bring it all to you on and off the convention floor. Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani and Maverick Senator John McCain are on tap tonight. Plus, we'll hear from top Bush officials, correspondents, protesters, and you. Tonight on Point, live from New York, we are raising the curtain on the Republican National Convention, what the GOP hopes to accomplish with the convention this week. Let's kick off our coverage with some sounds from speeches and events around New York City today.
I want to thank President Bush for supporting New York City in changing the Homeland Security funding formula and for leading the global war on terrorism. The president deserves our support. We are here to support him. And I am here to support him.
End this war, end the occupation, bring the troops home now, end the policies that allowed this reckless military misadventure to happen in the first place.
We think this is actually helpful if, like, the world sees kind of what the protesters are saying. Some people make reason arguments, and I feel some of these arguments are ad hominem. They're not really to the heart of what this election's about.
America is still the land of golden dreams, and it's the duty of our generation to make sure that our children and our children's children have all the opportunities that we have enjoyed and more. That effort has to begin with keeping our nation safe. And a sure reminder of that is the skyline of this great city, which was altered so violently on September 11th, 2001.
Mr. Chairman and delegates, it is my great honor and high privilege to nominate George W. Bush, a strong and compassionate leader, for the office of President of the United States of America.
September the 11th changed America. I'm running for four more years because I want to make this country a safer place. Change your sweet life. That day taught us that oceans no longer protect us from harm's way. That suddenly and unexpectedly an enemy can strike us. And therefore, we've got to do a lot to protect the homeland. And we are.
That was New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg, protester Nancy Lessen, a Republican Ohio delegate Dan Turney, Vice President Dick Cheney, another Ohio delegate Juan Jose Perez, submitting George W. Bush's name for nomination today, and President Bush himself campaigning today in Nashua, New Hampshire. He will arrive in New York later this week. Tonight, we are raising the curtain on the Republican National Convention live from Madison Square Garden in New York. What do you expect to hear from the Republicans this week? What do you hope for? What do you fear? Is your vote still up for grabs? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We will hear in a few minutes from President Bush's Chief of Staff, Andrew Card. But first, joining me now at Madison Square Garden, and great to have them all, are Karen Tumulty, national political correspondent for Time Magazine. Karen, great to have you with us today.
Thank you.
Ann Kornblut, national political correspondent for the Boston Globe. Ann, thanks for being here.
Hi.
And with us is James Pinkerton, columnist for Newsday and former White House aide to Presidents Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. Jim Pinkerton, wonderful to have you with
us
tonight.
Thank you, too.
So here we are, and what a scene it is in New York. I mean, yesterday is something else, hour after hour of those boulevards full of protesters going by, the heavy security. We saw it in Boston. It seems almost cubed here in Manhattan with their history of 9/11. And around all of that, this campaign going forward. We'll look at what this convention needs to accomplish, but let me put it to you first. Where are we in the great arc of this campaign, this contest of Kerry and Bush? Ann Kornblut, first to you.
Well, it seems hard to imagine that it's going to get more intense, but it is. We are sort of on the cusp of the real campaign season, even though it feels like it's been underway for so long now. It's excruciatingly close. And again, we say that, but just when we think we've seen some kind of development in the race, we see that the polls are actually once again getting tighter.
So a couple days ago, we heard Bush maybe nosing ahead.
That's right.
The Republicans felt good about that. They liked riding that moonbeam into New York.
It's getting to the point where rather than even looking at national polls, the polls they are now, both campaigns are circulating, are state-by-state polls. I've even seen local polls from local, you know, cities within specific states. It's getting down to that level of detail.
Because the contest has just become that close. They're fighting over block by block.
Just when you think it can't get any closer, that's right.
Karen, how do you see it? Where are we in this campaign? How would you describe it?
Well, you know, the calendar may say it's the end of August, but we're in the third week of October. The level of intensity that you are seeing on both sides, the level of intensity of voters, and one of the reasons that this race is so hard to call is that we are down to so few undecided voters. It's getting hard to poll because pollsters are having to you know, it's hard for them to find anybody who's truly undecided.
The Republicans made a lot of Bush's surge in the LA Times poll. I mean, it was just ahead by a nose, by half a nose. But that was something they wanted to grab onto coming to New York. Do you put much stock in that? Do you feel a fresh momentum in the Bush campaign, or is that just the sort of patina that comes with the convention?
Well, these polls are still within the margin of error, and that is the first thing we have to stipulate whenever we talk about them. But the fact is, 2 weeks ago, they were all within the margin of error with John Kerry slightly ahead. Now they all seem to be within the margin of error with very few exceptions, with George Bush ahead. And this is absolutely something that the Kerry campaign must be very worried about, despite the fact that they are, as Ann said, you know, giving us kind of individual polls and individual places that they say still look good for them.
So with that, Jim Pinkerton, what do you think the Republicans need to accomplish this week? We've heard a lot of them about them putting moderate voices up tonight with John McCain and Rudy Giuliani. Is this, in fact, the kind of softening week? Yes, George Bush is strong. Everything is about his strength. But is this the moderate face week?
I think that the Republicans are in a strange situation where the issues dynamic favors Kerry. You know,
the issues dynamic, i.e. the economy.
Uncertainty about the economy, clear, extreme difficulty in Iraq. The personal dynamic favors Bush. Bush is more likable.
The chemistry.
Also, the swift vote people have taken a big hole in Kerry. There's no way around that. And so the Bush people have to kind of emphasize, you know, their positives and try and move ahead on some of these issues and try and put issues like stem cell research behind them, because they don't want to talk about that at all between now and November. But as both of the previous discussants were saying, you know, there's so many little wrinkles that are tiny. For example, the big news of this week could prove to be that Ralph Nader was thrown off the ballot in Pennsylvania. If, in fact, that's a final judgment.
Because that might tip
Pennsylvania toward 1% of the voters who might be voting, or 2%, maybe less, voting for Nader may well be decisive in this. And so all that's going on up here may be less important than those 23 electoral votes in Pennsylvania and other state-by-state decisions being made out there on ballot access, of all things.
And yet there's a huge message machine at work here, very deliberate, very polished. Ann Kornblut, it is not an accident that we've got Giuliani and McCain coming up tonight, but you tell us why these two to kick it all off. They're hardly, you know, at the heart of the George Bush world.
Oh, absolutely not. But they are, you know, respectively a maverick and a moderate. McCain is certainly not a moderate, but a lot of not only voters, but I think reporters fell in love with him 4 years ago. And it sets a tone that this is not about hardcore conservatives. This is not about anger. It's not about invading new countries. It's really actually showcasing a number of personalities. You start with Giuliani and McCain tonight, huge personalities both. Tomorrow night is Arnold Schwarzenegger. That's going to give 48 hours of coverage of people who are dynamic speakers and who really generate a level of excitement. And so I almost think it isn't really going to matter what they're going to say tonight. We've already gotten some of the message out, and it's all, you know, what you would expect. The country needs to be led in the right direction and be safer and all that. But it's about the interviews that these folks give
and the sort of level of buzz and positivity that they bring to the convention.
But it is interesting that on the same day that the platform is formally confirmed, and it's a pretty tough, pretty hard right platform, absolutely for traditional marriage, absolutely against abortion, right down the line, these speakers tonight do not share those positions. Just a couple of moments ago, I grabbed Texas Senator John Cornyn. I asked him if the Republican Party is putting a more moderate face forward at this convention than what we see in the GOP platform.
I would say this is the face of the Republican Party. We are not the sort of caricature that Democrats would try to get people to believe, or in fact some of the people in popular media, to be candid with you about it. We are a diverse party, as represented by people like John McCain, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Rudy Giuliani.
But clearly there's a strategy at work here. You've got a platform that is strongly anti-abortion, strongly pro-traditional marriage, and you've got speakers coming up on the podium on the first night who don't hold either of those positions.
That's right. But we believe in majority rule, and the majority of the Republican Party believe in those platform positions. That's not to say everybody does unequivocally or to the same degree of intensity. But, you know, the great thing it is about this is we do have a variety of different faces, a variety of different people, a variety of different philosophies represented in this convention. And you did not see that in the Democratic convention. It was sort of a lockstep and an iron sort of rule. And we don't have that, and frankly, that's one thing that I think makes us a better party.
Do you need to put forward that more moderate face this week to win over swing voters, to get George Bush the majority he needs to win the election?
I would say that we need to make sure that the caricature that some on the left would make of the Republican Party as being somehow right-wing extremists is not true. Because, indeed, we do have a wide variety of ideologies and approaches and faces represented. And I think you'll see all of those represented, including some of the so-called moderate faces of the Republican Party.
But presumably, with your home state of Texas and your electorate there that put you in office, you're not looking for George Bush to adopt the positions of John McCain and Rudy Giuliani on abortion and gay marriage.
No, I think people know what George Bush stands for, and he's been very clear about that and unapologetic. But he's also shown, I think, concern about those issues that broad majorities in America care about, education reform, delivering Medicare reform for the first time since 1965, historic tax cuts and growth package, which have, although maybe not completely achieved our hopes and expectations yet, which have caused the economy to grow, created 1.5 million new jobs since January. People understand, they know who George Bush is. We don't know who John Kerry is because it seemed like every time he spoke and every major new thrust in recent months is sort of, he says he's going to reintroduce himself. Well, it's not that people don't know who John Kerry is. They do know who he is, and they just don't find him to be the kind of strong leader and principled person that we need leading us these next 4 years.
You guys are on message. John Cornyn, thanks for being with us tonight.
Great to be with you.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
Senator John Cornyn of Texas, Karen Tumulty, there he is saying, well, it's a big tent Republican Party, and John McCain and Rudy Giuliani, they're just part of the crew.
The contrast with what is in the platform, you have John McCain saying that, for instance, on the subject of gay marriage, the hot button issue of this year, John McCain saying that a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage is antithetical to everything the Republican Party stands for. Well, in the platform, you not only have support for the constitutional amendment, but actually, it's a platform that says you should also deny domestic partnership benefits to gay couples as well.
So the constitutional move plus another one.
This is a really big tent. So, by the way, and one more thing to say, to point out about Rudy Giuliani, he's not only a moderate, he is the icon of 9/11. To the degree that people outside of New York know anything about Rudy Giuliani at all, it's what they saw on 9/11. So the main reason he is there on that stage tonight is to remind people what they saw of George Bush on 9/11.
There will be a lot of conjuring up of 9/11 tonight and all this week. We are live at Madison Square Garden this week, covering the Republican National Convention. I'm with Ann Kornblut, Karen Tumulty, and Jim Pinkerton. At 7:45, the gavel comes down on tonight's events. Later tonight, John McCain and Rudy Giuliani. A lot going on here in New York. Ring upon ring of security and a big buzz inside the convention hall tonight. You can join our conversation this evening. What are your expectations of the GOP this week? What could you hear from the convention that would sway your vote to the Bush-Cheney ticket? Are you already there? Is your vote unwinnable by this team? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook at Madison Square Garden. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're at Madison Square Garden tonight, coming to you live from the Republican National Convention. Just about 20 minutes from now, the gavel will come down on the evening's events. Ed Gillespie will be there, John McCain, Rudy Giuliani, and much more. I'm joined tonight by Ann Kornblut of the Boston Globe, Karen Tumulty of Time Magazine, and Jim Pinkerton, former White House aide to Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush. We're raising the curtain on this convention, looking at what the Republicans hope to accomplish this week in New York. You can join the conversation. Are you looking at the moderate language from the podium? We might hear it tonight. Or the tougher ideology in the GOP platform? Did you buy the compassionate conservative George Bush in 2000? Are you prepared to buy that again this week? We're at 1-800-423-8255. A few minutes ago, I spoke with George Bush's chief of staff in the White House, Andrew Card. Let's listen to what he had to say about how things are shaping up.
The American people will come to realize that the leadership the president has provided is the most optimistic for the future. He's got a great vision for America. The Democrats came out of Boston, and they kind of reflected on the past. They were kind of stuck 30 years ago. This president will talk about what he wants to do for America and how he's got great hope for this country, and that the solid foundation that he's been building will be a foundation of growth and opportunity for people that may not have experienced it in the past. He'll talk about the opportunities and responsibilities of education, the responsibilities to make sure that high school kids actually learn something. He'll talk about the opportunity for housing and how we have to create more home ownership in this country. He'll talk about an ownership society. But most significantly, he'll talk about the hope that we all have and be able to experience our dreams.
And what does he need to accomplish? We've heard a lot about how they're bringing in moderate Republicans to speak this week to put a softer face in the Republican Party, which has looked pretty hard sometimes under duress in these last 4 years. Is that part of the goal of this? Is it the central goal of this convention to soften the face of the Bush administration for swing voters in the home stretch of November?
The president is truly a compassionate conservative.
Well, we heard this 4 years ago, but that kind of went away, didn't it?
But we're going to remind people that he is a truly compassionate conservative, and he has already helped to eliminate one of the great bigotries in this country, and that's the bigotry of low expectation, and where we allowed students to be left behind. And one of the first things he did was to pass an education reform package, and he had bipartisan help. Ted Kennedy certainly helped. Get that bipartisan legislation into reality, where we have an act on the books that will say no child should be left behind. And now we've got to implement that law, and that's something the president will talk about.
When you guys head out of here on Thursday or Friday, when you head back to the White House or to Texas or wherever the president goes next, what do you hope to have accomplished with this week? What do you need to accomplish to move closer to his reelection?
Well, we've got tremendous momentum coming into the convention. We're better off coming into the convention than a lot of pundits predicted. So we've got to continue to build on that great momentum and demonstrate that the president's leadership is about the future, and that he has built a solid foundation so that we can have a bright and hopeful future. And let's not forget the economy. The economy turned a tough corner. We had a horrible recession that we inherited. We had the shock of September 11th. We had the crisis of corporate governance. And we've overcome so many burdens in our economy. And the tax cuts that the president put in place helped to shore up an opportunity for entrepreneurs to take advantage of tax incentives to hire people.
Are you satisfied with the way the economy has responded?
No, we're not satisfied, but we're a lot better off than we would be if the president hadn't cut taxes, and we're a lot better off if he didn't create a climate where entrepreneurs and small businesses could flourish and start to hire people back.
Do you think Americans understand? Do you think they agree that the economy's done so well in these years that it's back?
Well, the economy that the president inherited was in recession. And we came to know that after we took office. But it was already in recession when we took office. So he inherited a very bad situation where the public expectations may not have realized it. And he had to overcome that negative momentum in our economy, arrest it, build a solid foundation of tax cuts, at the same time that he was pushing an agenda to improve our schools and improve health care. Remember, there was a promise that went on for about 20 years that seniors would get prescription drug coverage. It was a promise that was unkept until President Bush said, I will deliver on that promise, and he did, and he passed Medicare reform that also brought prescription drug coverage for our seniors.
Of course, still a lot of grumbling about that among seniors and the concern that it didn't do any price leveraging on the big drug companies.
They are much better off, and we're gonna, I tell you, this, seniors will have prescription drug coverage, and poor seniors will have free prescription drug coverage. So it's a great victory for the seniors in our country.
Are you on path for a victory? Do you know yet? Is it going to be neck and neck to the end?
Well, I think it will be a close election. The Electoral College system suggests that it will be very close. We're doing very well. I feel confident. I think we're in much better shape today than we were predicted to be. Certainly, in the beginning of the summer, even before the Democratic convention, there were predictions that we would be way behind coming into the Republican convention in New York City. So we're much better shape than the people thought, and I feel very good.
Andrew Card, President Bush's White House Chief of Staff, speaking with us just a few moments ago here at Madison Square Garden in New York, where we are at the Republican convention. Jim Pinkerton, here's the guy at the president's elbow, and you heard it. You sort of give him the opening, and he talks about the first things are not Iraq and not even the economy writ large. It's education, housing, the ownership society, and hope. What's going on with this attack?
Well, Andy Card, son of the Bay State, was
Holbrook
very much
man from Massachusetts.
On message. Look, I think that the Karl Rove and company have figured out that everybody knows about the Iraq War. Either you like it, you don't like it. And so they figure they've got to talk about all the issues that Andy mentioned in his talk. The problem they have is that Bush himself, not understandably, for somebody who's been through the sort of personal crucible that he's been through, really does want to talk more about Iraq. The Q's and A's and the town meetings, like, he wants to talk about Iraq. He wants to defend it. He's got one, and frankly, he gets himself in trouble because the reporters will ask him all these hypothetical questions. Well, if you knew there are no WMDs, would you still do it? Oh, yes. I mean, he's getting himself deeper in sort of a more hawkish position on Iraq.
Though he actually called it a miscalculation this week.
Reality is kind of bearing down on him, and he's saying now the war on terror will last sort of forever, as far as I can tell. I mean, so Bush is more and more wrapped in the coils of his own war, whereas the spin doctors and the communicators are saying, look, that's not really how you're going to carry moderate swing voters. So there's a tension between Andy, who is totally on message, and the president, who is a little, I would say, off message.
Yeah, and Karen Timothy, do you see it working? If the president's out talking about Iraq, everybody else is doing, I mean, we've heard this a lot this week. It's what's the phrase this week? A safer world and a more hopeful America. And these domestic talking points, like Andy Card had right here, is that what the president, is this all about that swing voter? Is that what the president needs at this point?
He needs a couple of things. No, it's not entirely about the swing voter, because as much or more so than any election in any of our memories here, Tom, this is also going to be about getting your base excited and involved and really determined to vote. So, the convention message is very much reaching out to moderate swing voters, but the ground operation is in full gear. And so you've got to essentially do two things, and two things that in some ways are almost contradictory.
Well, here you've got the platform still going straight to that base and the messages, which may go broader. Ann Cornblut, throughout the few days running up to this convention, it's clear that part of the songbook, the hymnal here, is to diss the Democrats' use of their own convention. Everybody is saying they missed an opportunity in Boston to look forward at the future. We're going to paint the future here at the GOP convention. A fair criticism or a way of painting the Democrats into a, you know, negative postmortem?
Well, I think they certainly can hope that the convention was long enough ago now that everyone's forgotten what actually took place there. I think they're hard pressed to make the argument that it was simply a negative convention. I think it's also a very tricky argument for the Republicans because Bush has not laid out exactly what he would do for the next 4 years. And there are indications that he's going to talk about flex time, Social Security privatization, some adjustments of the tax code. But if they're going to do something, if they're going to lay out major, major points for the next 4 years, they haven't done it yet the way they did in 2000, where he talked about the few simple things he would accomplish and then proceeded to do. So I think, you know, they've set the bar very high for what the second term agenda would look like, and they're really going to, in the next few days, have to try and reach it.
We've heard again and again this week, wait till Thursday, wait till Thursday. The president's going to paint the picture. Is it in the pipeline, Karen?
Is what in the pipeline?
Is this vision of the next term, of a next Bush term, is it, do you anticipate that we're going to see a big rollout in the president's speech on Thursday night? Here's what I will do.
Well, no, we're not going to get the, you know, line by line what his, you know, agenda is going to look like. The themes are very broad. They're very, you know, this whole, you know, ownership, opportunity. I mean, they're all words that, you know, I'm sure tested very well in focus groups. No, there will be probably a few specifics announced and maybe a surprise or two in there, but I don't think you're going to see him proposing anything very detailed or even very radical.
I want to bring our callers in. Mary is calling from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Thank you. I guess I'm going to limit it to my two major concerns about how this will play out. The first one would be that they're going to wrap themselves around 9/11 and cover the problems, the severe problems of Iraq and Afghanistan, which has totally gone out of the picture. And basically we have a very serious and frightening picture in Afghanistan alone, much less Iraq. And the second issue that I'm kind of concerned on really rests on the media, which continues to perpetuate this image of Kerry as being not as likable and that George Bush is likable. I don't know who the polls and the pundits are about the likability of President Bush, but in my circles, President Bush is not likable. I don't know that we can like a president that chooses to go to war on his own will with so much documentation showing this basically foundless reason to go and commit us into mire us in this horrible Middle East crisis.
So you're not drawn by the set of that jaw, by a twinkle in that bush eye? None of that's getting you, Mary?
Well, it's actually irritating me because, frankly, I feel like the media is, they did the same thing with Gore. You know, he's stiff,
right.
He's this, he's that. And then the same thing happened to Dean, that yell, instead of one that they could have taken as one of release of energy and frustration and determination, was made into the biggest joke, and he was out.
Mary, interesting point. Let us pick it up here in Madison Square Garden. Thanks for calling in. Jim Pinkerton, how about it? You're a guy who can look at a scene and interpret it in very human terms. A fair interpretation that there's a higher likability factor? You said earlier the chemistry with George Bush is just better. That's what's working. Or is this the media falling into a kind of trap? How do you see
it? I don't think the media are overly fond of Bush. So I think that the fact that he's seen as more likable really is a function of likability. And the evidence for that is, don't take my word for it, is the polls. In Boston last month, I remember seeing a poll, and I can't remember where it came from. It was more or less, why are you voting for Kerry and why are you voting for Bush? Mm-hmm. And it was like, I'm voting for Kerry because I like him, 40. I'm voting for Kerry because I have 100. Mm-hmm. I'm voting for Kerry because I hate Bush, 40. And I'm voting for Kerry because he's the nominee, 20. For Bush, it was for Bush because I like Bush, 80. For, because I hate Kerry, 16. And because he's the nominee, 3. So in other words, the level of support for people who like Bush among Bush voters was twice as high as it was for Kerry, which tells me, as I saw in Boston myself, look, even Democrats are hard-pressed to express inordinate enthusiasm for Kerry.
Ann Kornblut, how about it? Do the Republicans believe that in George Bush they've got a character, a personality, that's just a winning card for them? I mean, as Karen was pointing out in the polls, until very recently that hasn't been clear. Clearly, it's not universal, though it doesn't have to be.
Oh,
it only
absolutely
has to be a majority. But have they got the winning character here? And do they highlight it even more? I mean, clearly this week they will, and going forward, how do they draw that distinction?
If you start from the standpoint that they're at, which is that they want to turn out their base, as Karen mentioned, that is really their number one priority, with appealing to moderates being a close second, but still the number one priority. Bush's personality among conservatives, among very committed Republicans, is extremely high. They just like him. They trust what he says. And so to the extent that emphasizing his personality and the personality distinctions between Bush and Kerry benefits them, yes, I think we see them doing that. I also think they've repeated a lot of the lines, as the caller mentioned, that were used about Gore in 2000. But the polling data does not suggest that Kerry is turns voters off as much as Gore did, I would say. And also, it does seem that voters are paying more attention to the substance of the election this time, and that personality, while it may be a factor, isn't necessarily the number one concern as the, you know, who do you want to have a beer with question that we talked about so much in 2000 really doesn't seem to be at the forefront of people's minds.
How do you
but
see it, Kerry?
Part of this is George Bush. I mean, we at Time Magazine late last year ran on the cover, the love him, hate him president.
Yep, okay.
He is a president more so than, again, anybody we've seen in a long time, more so even than Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton, who people just love or they just despise. And in part, it tells you something about how polarized the country is. But it also tells you it's George Bush himself. This is a man whose presidency is based on his very personal beliefs, his very personal view of the world, which is that
intuitive, the gut level.
And also with not very many shades of gray. This is a man who will say that he is guided by his religious faith. This is something that you either love that about the guy or you just despise it about him. And John Kerry is a very different kind of person. I mean, he loves to talk about his thought processes. He won't talk about his religious faith. So in some ways, it's not so much likability as it is the degree to which the two different candidates have put their personalities and their belief systems out there as who they are and how they will govern.
Very different men. David's calling from Milwaukee. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Hi. Good to be on.
Good to have you.
At first, I was kind of not decided about who I wanted to vote for this election year.
Okay.
But as I stacked it up, I was thinking about George Bush, and it's not really a question of, you know, do I like them or do they look warm and friendly, but it really came down to the fact that even the point that they had that Bush is a strong and decisive leader, and that's a good thing, that's great. But it came down to me for the issue, the platform, you know, against abortion, against gay marriage. And, you know, they might say that, well, not everybody in the Republican, it's more the majority, but George Bush is the majority, and he's the one who's going to be president.
So where does that leave you now?
Well, that leaves me straight up against, that leaves me going for Kerry, because I'm not on the platform that George Bush is. I don't like the way he holds his religion on his sleeve. I just don't like that. And in terms of the economics, you had so many NPR programs that said, presidents don't really have that great of influence major impact on the economics.
So if John McCain and Rudy Giuliani deliver moderate messages tonight, do you wrap that around George Bush? Do you transfer that to him? Or have you made your decision? You're not going with those platform positions?
No, it looks nice for the Republican Party, but it comes down to George Bush's actions if he becomes president, and he's not going to represent it.
Got it. David in Milwaukee, thanks a lot for calling into Madison Square Garden. We are covering the Republican convention tonight from the heart of New York City, from the heart of Manhattan. It has been a wild couple of days. Big protests. We'll hear more about that later this evening. We will hear the gavel come down, I think, in just a few minutes here at the Garden. You're welcome to join this conversation as well. What is speaking more loudly to you this week, the Republicans on the program or the protesters in the streets, the positions in the platform with the swift boat attacks? And now the convention, is George Bush gaining momentum? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook, live from New York. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, coming to you live this week from Madison Square Garden in Manhattan, in New York City. And we are raising the curtain tonight on the Republican National Convention. Well, gavel will come down in just a few minutes, and we'll be off to the races with the speakers here. A big lineup throughout this week. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Rudy Giuliani, and John McCain tonight. Laura Bush, Mrs. Cheney, the Vice President, and, of course, the President on Thursday night. You can join our conversation tonight. What do you think? Are you the voter that the GOP needs?
needs to win this week, and how could they do it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined here in Madison Square Garden by Karen Tumulty of Time Magazine and Kornblut of the Boston Globe, and Jim Pinkerton, now a columnist for Newsday, a former White House aide to Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. Bob's calling right now from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
Great, thanks. What's on your mind, Bob? Yeah.
Well, I'm a registered Republican. I will be voting for George Bush, but my comment is that since the presidential season has begun, I have been polled 4, 5, 6 times.
Wow, they like your number, Bob.
And I have always lied on the polls. When the Democrats have asked me who I'm going to vote for, I always say Kerry.
Now, why do you do that?
Well, myself and a growing number of people, number one, are very tired of being polled all the time, and we don't want the press to determine the election.
You don't want accurate polls out there. You want to kind of throw some sand in their gears, Bob.
Right. Well, you know, they're going to project this, they're going to project that, right. And then the candidates change their message based on the polls. And I think what America wants is a candidate that actually stands for something, and then people can either vote for him or not vote for him, and we don't really need chameleons who are going to change the message based on what the polls say.
And you say you're a Bush guy. Why? Is that because you think George Bush stands for what he believes in, says it more straightforward than the other?
Well, I mean, to put it plainly, I fall in the neocon camp.
So you're ready to preemptively invade?
Well, I'm not necessarily ready to preemptively invade. I think, you know, that democracy is the greatest thing since sliced bread, and whatever we can do to spread it throughout the world will benefit the world in the long run.
And what did you think of the Democratic Convention, Bob? What do you hope to hear similar or in contrast from New York this week from the GOP?
I'd like to see that the Republican Party move towards the middle. I understand that President Bush has to pander to the right, but so does Kerry. He has to pander to the left, and once they get into office, whoever it is ends up coming towards the middle anyway, because that's the way politics works.
Well, I wonder if it's been that way with George W. Bush, though. He hasn't exactly come toward the middle, but let us pick all that up, Bob, and thanks for joining us and reporting on your polling pranks down there in Raleigh. Karen Tumulty, how about it? Bob says everybody comes toward the middle, but of course the impression many people have of George Bush is the opposite. He talked conservative, compassionate conservative, kind of a healer. In the event, maybe that hasn't been the case.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, what people seem to have thought they had heard from George Bush in 2000, if you go back and really look at his language, Bill Clinton will say he is governing exactly the way he said he was going to govern. But for people who heard the rhetoric of the 2000 campaign and heard compassionate conservatism, it was surprising that, you know, almost from right off the bat in this administration, he went for his entire tax cut. You know, he decided that he had an agenda and he was going to pursue it all the way. One of the first acts of this administration, for instance, was turning back on his own words on global warming and carbon dioxide emissions that, you know, during the campaign he had supported putting caps on them, and then within 3 months of taking office, he had turned and taken a turn to the right, at least in the view of a lot of people.
Jim Pinkerton, it was clear in the streets of New York yesterday that there are many people who are not supporters, that they are really upset with this man. That was the biggest demonstration New York has seen in decades, maybe the biggest demonstration ever at a national party convention of either party, including Chicago 68. This has not been a man who has exactly captured the middle.
Well, except that he's up to about 47-48%. I mean, I think that the trick here is that both parties seem to have perfected the art of base consolidation and getting just up to the middle. I mean, there must be a lot of communication inside the parties, email, direct mail, and so on, where he's just keep everybody stoked up. So that this is why we've been at no presidential candidate has won over 50% of the vote since 1988. I mean, we're in a 49 country. So Bush, you know, this fellow here, you know, says he's a neocon, but Bush is pandering to the right, so he must think of himself somehow as being in the middle if he's thinking of the right as something other than himself. And I must say, just listening to him talk, I can't resist saying we are due for a surprise. Every election produces a surprise of some kind. I mean, for example, the Bush people won in 2000 because they had an electoral college strategy. They had nobody realized that they had a plan for winning West Virginia that the Gore people thought was just an automatic Democratic state. With all this internet technology, with all this, again, not to mention phony polls and or polls being invalidated whimsical
Frank respondents.
Yeah, exactly. I think that we're going to wake up on November 2nd and we're going to find some result somewhere, whether it's voting machines or vote fraud or internet something or other, where people say, wow, we had no idea that state X was going to go that way.
Regardless of what happens inside the convention hall this week, Jim and the gavel will be coming down in a few moments on tonight's program. The delegates are milling around on the floor now, getting ready for that to happen. Jim, let me ask you about those protests yesterday and what may still come this week. Tomorrow may be a big day of protests as well. There was a lot of expectation that if there was violence, it would have an effect one way or another. It turned out to be incredibly peaceful, very few arrests. How do you think the image of those huge boulevards full of protesters plays this week?
I think a lot of Republicans go back to 1968 and say, well, see, big protests hurt the Democrats. I think the mistake that in that logic is big protests hurt the incumbents. You know, I mean, people think there's going to be trouble if so-and-so is reelected because so-and-so brought trouble. Then that's bad for the incumbents. And so I think the protests, frankly, swallowed a lot of the news. I think the Republicans have been, and the Democrats, too, by the way, in Boston, have been foolish to sit at 8 o'clock at night and think they're going to get coverage when the news is all day.
It will go wherever it goes.
Exactly. If they'd been smart, both parties, that is, they would have had a speech at 8 a.m., one at noon. I mean, a big one, not just some benediction.
Keep but the news they rolling put through the
Giuliani
day.
Giuliani and McCain, exactly, because people like us would have been entertained all day. People reading their emails all day at work, you know, watching TV, which appears to be what most Americans do now, as far as I can tell.
That's the national pastime. Karen.
May I just make one point on the comparison of these protests with 1968? And people keep pointing to the numbers. But one thing that's very different from 1968 is that all those people were protesting one thing, the Vietnam War. These are people you go through the streets, and some of them are out there because they don't like George Bush on abortion rights, and some people don't like him on war, and some people don't like him on, you know. So it seems to be the only thing that was unifying these people in this protest. They don't like George Bush.
But isn't that enough, given that that's what they're voting on?
Except that I don't know that it is quite, you know, when it was one issue, one cause that was driving, you know, all these protesters in 1968 in one direction. It was just the intensity was, I think, you know, the numbers were there yesterday, but I don't think the intensity really compares to 1968.
Of course, it was nothing in Boston compared to what we saw here in New York yesterday. How much does that matter? What kind of indicator do you take that giant protest to be?
Well, I don't think it's a fair comparison, really, because there's nothing to protest. There were not Massachusetts Republicans protesting Kerry's Senate record. I mean, these are protesters here who have almost 4 years of Bush administration that they disagree with on many levels, as Karen said, and they are here specifically protesting President Bush in a state and a city that is very liberal, and there are many more Democrats at the ready here to protest him. I think I don't think they got a lot of. I don't think they gained much from the images yesterday. There were not people being dragged off in handcuffs. This was not anarchy in the streets.
They were too peaceful?
I think too peaceful, perhaps, for the Republicans to make the argument that it's 1968 all over again. It was relatively without incident. I think there were a few hundred arrests, people trying to light something on fire. But while it may have swallowed their message for a day, I don't know that it's going to be enough for them to bludgeon the Democrats with.
But a rare image in American politics to see
Indeed.
Avenues full of people. Speaking of avenues, it's less than 4 miles from here, Jim Pinkerton, is, of course, the World Trade Center site. 9/11 will get a lot of attention from the Republicans this week. How do you think that's going to play?
Well, the war on terror will get a lot of attention, and America's changed, and the world's different, and so on. But I don't think Ground Zero itself is going to get a lot of attention. I mean, I think the original plan, I'm sure in my mind, was that they were going to go down there and lay a wreath or something.
Yeah, and the president himself.
Yeah, and I even this week we're hearing what I think was an abortive thought about going to a firehouse to go watch, for example, Bush on Wednesday night to watch Cheney on TV.
Ladies right? and gentlemen,
I think the challenge they have is
give a warm welcome to
the protesters and the general tenor of New York have made it impossible to them to actually use 9/11 itself. So they're stuck with the larger mega war issue, which, frankly, is not a big positive for them, to put it mildly, as it was even 6 months ago.
Just doesn't look so great. You can hear things heating up on the floor right now, the delegates gathering in their seats, and we've got speakers. Ah, there's the gavel.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats.
This is Deborah Price of Ohio.
The second session of the 38th Republican National Convention is about to begin. Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats.
This is the deputy permanent co-chair at the podium.
The 38th Republican National Convention, second session, is hereby called to order.
And there you have it, complete with sound effects of a trumpeting bull elephant in the hall in Madison Square Garden.
Would everyone please rise for the presentation of the colors?
So the police department will come out and the pomp and circumstance get underway. Let's turn to a call. Herb is calling from Whitman, Massachusetts. Hi, Herb, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks, Herb.
I think the bottom line to me, I'm retired, and I go back to the basics. I've dealt with John Kerry in the past when he had a cookie shop in Faneuil Hall in Boston. He's a very
long time ago.
Well, way. But he's a very difficult person to deal with. And although I'm an independent, I would have had a beer with Bill Clinton, and I would have a beer with George Bush. And I think the bottom line is it goes back to personalities. John Kerry is a very difficult person to deal with. And not that I'm totally enamored with George Bush, but I think he's a basic person. And I think it goes back to basics. It's, you know, from the mail vote, it's a basic thing.
So are you going to vote on the basis of who you'd like to have a beer with, Herb? Is that your bottom line?
No, I don't care for John Kerry only because he's left a bad taste in my mouth through the years. And I don't think he's the right person for the job. I could have voted for John Edwards. I think John Edwards is a man of the people. I don't think John Kerry is. I think he's totally out of touch with the people. And I feel badly for the Democratic Party because I think that I might have had a much better chance with John Edwards than with John Kerry.
Yeah, you know, on the night that Kerry spoke in Boston, he seemed to fire up a fair number of people. Clearly didn't get your vote on that night. Well, Herb, thanks for calling in. Ann Kornblut, this personality issue just comes out and comes out and comes out. Is that what we're going to come down to here?
Well, as you know, politics is tough in Massachusetts. I think, actually, there's no place in the country that's tougher on Kerry and his personality than the voters in Massachusetts, especially when I go back and I hear. I've heard a lot of people elsewhere in the country express adoration for Kerry than I have in Massachusetts, where I think people are very tough. Again, as I said earlier, I think that while the personalities, obviously they always matter, I think that from the voters we hear from, and I'm sure all of us are inundated with email and mail, people are begging to talk about issues, and I sometimes feel like the readers know far more about a lot of the issues and the platforms than even I do.
Although, to some degree, the election is, in fact, again, quoting Bill Clinton, as he always said, a job interview. I mean, voters are looking at someone that they are going to have to live with for the next 4 to 8 years. So the question, that's how you always come back to this question of who you'd have a beer with, or in George Bush's case, a non-alcoholic beer.
You're right. It would be. Jim Pinkerton, just a few seconds left. Your thoughts from the streets of New York this week?
Well, I just can't resist saying that in Boston, I met a veteran who was in Vietnam, knew Kerry from the Winter Soldiers period, went through the whole era with him, mm-hmm. was totally on board with the anti-war message, and despised Kerry.
Well, it happens, we've got enough. But yet, he's got his band of brothers that stand up there as well. You're going to have individuals to see it both ways.
He's got the people who weren't as proximate to Kerry, but
pouring all kinds
of
vitriol, and that may have had a big effect over
And I think a lot of it has to do with after Vietnam, but nonetheless, it's sincere and earnest.
Well, he didn't have 500,000 people protesting him either at his convention, so I guess
He surely did not. We have a lot more coming this week from Madison Square Garden in New York, and Kornblut with the Boston Globe, Karen Tumulty with Time Magazine, and Jim Pinkerton, Newsday, former White House aide to Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, live from New York City. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.